content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. Sorry I've missed you the last couple of weeks. I was really sick, but I have my voice back. So, starting off with a WRAL article on CRISPR therapy for Leber congenital amaurosis that was read on the air the other night from WRAL.com. Experimental gene therapy restores some vision in patients with inherited blindness. A treatment that used CRISPR was found to be safe and efficacious in improving vision among a small sample of patients with inherited blindness. Article by Jacqueline Howard for CNN. For her entire life, college student Olivia Cook had only a small degree of central vision. It was as if she was watching the world through a straw hole, and in dimly lit places, she could not make out people's faces, only their silhouettes. But after receiving an experimental gene editing treatment to one of her eyes, she can now see things she never saw before. Raleigh neighbors in missing... Sorry, that's an ad in the middle of the article. Cook was born with an inherited retinal disorder that causes blindness, a rare type of eye disorder historically called Leber congenital amaurosis, or LCA. A few years ago, she decided to participate in a clinical trial that involved using the gene editing tool CRISPR to correct the form of inherited blindness that she has. My life has mostly changed in terms of being hopeful that there's going to be more science and findings in the future, said Cook, 22, who is currently studying marketing and product development at Missouri State University in Springfield. She received the experimental gene editing treatment through a surgery performed on her left eye. Now, post-surgery and post-recovery, I'm able to see in dimmer lighting with my left eye, Cook said. A treatment that used CRISPR was found to be safe and efficacious in improving vision among a small sample of patients with inherited blindness in the phase 1/2 clinical trial that Cook participated in. Inherited retinal degeneration are a leading cause of blindness around the world. Among a total of 14 volunteers, including Cook, the gene editing tool was found to be associated with a meaningful improvement in vision for most patients around 3 months later, and it was not directly tied to any serious side effects, according to the trial results published Monday in the New England Journal of Medicine. The therapy remains experimental, and the results need to be replicated in a larger group of people. Months following the treatment, Cook was sitting with friends in a balcony that had Christmas lights wrapped around the railing. It was dusk, she recalled, yet she could see her friends' faces glow under the twinkling Christmas lights. She was shocked. With my right eye, I was not able to see their facial features. I was only able to see their silhouette. With my left eye, I could see everything on their face. So significant difference, especially in the dim lighting, Cook said about that evening. One of the biggest aha moments that I had was I had been talking to my mom one day after the surgery, about 6 to 9 months after the surgery, when I noticed most of my improvement, Cook said. I could see a candle flickering behind me, which I've never seen that before, she said. I'd never picked up anything from over there before with the peripheral. Before the treatment, Cook said that she sometimes could conceal the vision challenges she's had. Her limited vision was often an internal struggle. You couldn't really know that my eyesight was terrible until you spent a significant amount of time with me, Cook said. If we saw each other in the street, if I introduced myself to you, you'd never know. But now she's no longer hiding. A groundbreaking proof of concept. This study is the first time that CRISPR has been used in the eyes of the living people. The results of this study provide proof of concept that CRISPR Cas9 gene editing can be used safely and effectively to treat inherited retinal disorders, said the study's first author, Dr. Eric Pierce, director of the Ocular Genomics Institute at Mass Eye and Ear and Harvard Medical School. The trial was funded by the biotechnology company Editas Medicine and conducted in the United States by researchers at Mass Eye and Ear of the Mass General Brigham Healthcare System, and other U.S.-based institutions, including the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, the University of Michigan, the University of Miami, and Oregon Health and Science University. We're really hopeful that CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technologies will now be applied to other genetic forms of inherited blindness and indeed other genetic diseases in general, Pierce said. We're hoping this will help open the era of therapeutic use of CRISPR-Cas9 technologies. The trial, which started in 2019, enrolled 12 adults ages 17 to 63 and two children ages 9 and 14 with inherited retinal degeneration caused by mutations on the CEP290 gene. That gene provides instructions for making a protein involved in many types of cells, including light receptor cells in the eyes. Mutations in CEP290 are the most common cause of severe early-onset retinal degeneration, which causes vision loss in children. Currently, there's no treatment approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for CEP290-associated inherited retinal degenerations. These patients would not be able to read any lines of letters or numbers on a vision chart that most people receive at the eye doctor, and visual impairment may worsen over time. For the trial, the 14 participants underwent a surgical procedure in which a drug called Edit 101 that encodes the CRISPR gene editing components was injected under the retina of one of their eyes. Since the trial was conducted to primarily evaluate safety and efficacy, only one eye in each patient was studied. The subjects get an injection of the gene editing drug, which is called Edit 101, under their retina, Pierce said. That drug encodes the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing machinery, and once that starts working inside the retinal cells of those patients, it cuts out the mutation in CEP290 from the genome of their retinal cells, allowing the function of the CEP290 gene to be restored. When the first patients in the study were treated in 2020, it was the first time in medical history that a CRISPR-based medicine resulting in gene editing was inserted directly into the human body. Among the adult volunteers, two were given a low dose of the medication, five were given an intermediate dose, and five were given a high dose. Both of the children in the study were given the intermediate dose. The outpatient procedure took around an hour and a half. The patients were then monitored every 3 months for a year, and then less frequent monitoring continued for 2 years. In these follow-up visits, they underwent a series of vision tests, among other evaluations. The researchers found that 11 patients in the study had some type of improvement in their vision following the CRISPR therapy, and these improvements occurred about 3 months after the procedure and were sustained during subsequent visits. Also, no serious side effects occurred in response to the treatment at any of the dose sizes, according to the researchers, and the adverse events that did occur were mild or moderate. There were also no signs that the CRISPR gene editing caused ripple effect harm to the genomes of the patients. The primary goal of this first in-human study was to test the safety of using CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing in vivo. When we started the trials, the subjects who were treated were the first patients ever to have received CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing treatments in vivo, Pierce said. There were no serious adverse events related to the treatment or the surgery required to deliver the treatment, and no dose-limiting toxicities. Following the surgery, one patient experienced some bleeding in the eye, impairing their vision, but that has since resolved, according to the researchers. Once that hemorrhage cleared, the subject's vision returned to baseline, Pierce said. Another patient experienced vision impairment associated with small mounds observed under the retina 6 months after the procedure. These types of hyperreflective mounds have been seen in other studies involving subretinal gene therapies, the researchers noted, and the cause of them is not clear. It's thought to be inflammation, Pierce said, about the mounds. The patient was treated with a course of steroid medicines, according to the study, and their recovery is ongoing. As the mounds resolved, their vision also improved, Pierce said. I think this drug was as safe as possible in terms of design. It's not a panacea. Complete vision has not been restored among the patients. Most in the trial could not read any line of an eye chart prior to the study, and only 4 of them experienced some improvements in this ability. But some patients reported after receiving treatment being able to see their cell phones light up, differentiate various foods on their dinner plates, identify the spinning apple icon on a computer screen, or even noticing vibrant sunsets. I started to see what are described as bursts of color, said Michael Kalbauer, 46, who received the CRISPR treatment in his right eye and first noticed improvements in his vision about 2 to 6 months later. He started the study in 2020. It was a pretty cool moment to see strobe lights on the dance floor of my cousin's wedding change color, said Kalbauer, who added that if he had not received the treatment, all he would have seen on the dance floor would have been shadows and flickering lights, and he would not have been able to identify the colors. Kalbauer described the CRISPR treatment as groundbreaking, but warned it's not a cure. It's not a panacea, said Kalbauer, who still can't see standard text or photos on a screen. My disease is still here. It's not gone. I'm not cured, but it definitely slowed the progression of it. Pierce said that he hopes this approach to using CRISPR as a therapy for inherited blindness can be studied again in a larger and more diverse group of patients. All of the Phase 1-2 trial participants were non-Hispanic and white. In 2022, Editas Medicine announced that it paused further study in CRISPR gene editing as a therapeutic approach for CEP290-associated inherited blindness, and instead of conducting further trials, has continued to follow up with the patients who have been treated to date. The latest results from the Phase 1-2 trial support moving forward with a Phase 3 trial and then ultimately registering the therapy for possible FDA approval, Pierce said. We are working with Editas to identify an additional commercial partner for Phase 3 studies. We're actually hoping this publication will stimulate interest in the biotech and pharma communities about that, Pierce said. More research over time could shed light on the long-term effects of the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing tools, which now that they've been injected into patients, will be present in patients for the rest of their lives, Pierce said. I think the real risk that we're all concerned about with CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing is, could the gene editing machinery that we've introduced into the retinal cells of these patients do something else, somewhere else in the genome, in addition to the therapeutic activities it was designed for, Pierce said. Could a cut in the genome be made 10 years from now that could have an adverse effect over time? I think the answer to that is, yes, it could, but we're hopeful that risk is very low, Pierce said. That's what we need additional follow-up for. Quality of life matters. The results from the Phase 1-2 trial and how patients experience some improvements in vision are a valuable reminder of how important quality of life can be for patients, said Art Kaplan, with a professor of bioethics and founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU Grossman School of Medicine's Department of Population Health. Usually when we're doing gene therapies or other innovative interventions, we associate them with saving lives. This experiment is a huge reminder that quality of life matters. This is about vision, Kaplan said. No one's dying, no one's saved, but restoration of vision is an important achievement, and it's a reminder that quality of life has to be factored into what we decide to cover in terms of insurance, reimbursement, and what we try to study. He agreed with the researchers that more safety data over time would be helpful. They haven't really had these subjects that long with intervention to guarantee long-term safety, Kaplan said. For these kinds of genetic interventions, you have to follow them over long periods of time, years, to make sure that other genes aren't impacted. These new Phase 1-2 trial results provide a building block for scientists to work from in the future when developing gene therapies to treat eye disorders, said Dr. Vlad Diaconida, a retinal surgeon and assistant professor of ophthalmology at Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons. He was not involved in the trial. Does this apply to the American population at large? Not right now, Diaconida said about the experimental treatment. It does, however, apply to the thousands of kids born in future years that have this particular genetic subtype. So yes, an approval of this particular gene delivery could benefit people over time, he said. It's a proof of concept that seems to be moving us in the right direction. Diaconida's colleague, Dr. Aliyah Abdel-Hakim, ABDELHAKIM, called this proof of concept study groundbreaking in the sense that it shows the treatment approach can be safe and result in some improvement for patients. But more research is needed on a larger scale to determine what kind of patients will benefit in the long term and how long those improvements may last. We still have to wait a little longer to see if this pans out in the long term, said Abdel Hakim, an ophthalmologist, geneticist, retina specialist, and assistant professor of ophthalmology at Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons. She also was not involved in the trial. We don't know if improvements from this treatment are going to be sustained. Is their vision going to stay improved throughout their lives? She asked. The reason this is important is because this is the first time CRISPR's been used in this way, in the eye. The CNN Wire and 2024 Cable News Network, a Warner Brothers Discovery Company, all rights reserved. Posted on the Governor Moorhead School Facebook page from design.ncsu.edu, Freedom by Design celebrates with custom-designed outdoor learning center, article by Christine Klock, K-L-O-C-K-E. Students of the Governor Moorhead School, GMS, celebrated the redesign of their new outdoor learning center in a ceremony on Thursday, April 11th, surrounded by community members, builders, and NC State students who contributed to the project's design and much of the labor, both in the shop and on the site. The project has been one of the most ambitious in the Freedom by Design Club, housed within the American Institute of Architects student chapter at NC State. Students in Freedom by Design are committed to designing and building solutions to community problems and have worked with teachers and administrators at the Governor Moorhead School to anticipate and account for student needs in this space. This project represents countless hours of meetings, volunteer services, designs, redesigns, and donated funds, said Melvin Diggs, director of the Governor Moorhead School. Every part, every shape, is designed to help support our students' learning experience, to build confidence in themselves, to be empowered learners, seek out new challenges, and be the successful citizens we know that they will be. The previous playground was inaccessible to the students, with only a slide, a small swing set, and some monkey bars. It included mulch, which was hard for the students to traverse. The new design specifically accounts for the visual impairment of the students at GMS, with high contrast surface materials, a tactile sensory wall, a series of auditory chimes, a whisper tube, a bench swing, a spin station, a track with a banked curve, an edible garden, and much needed shade and resting space. The resulting project cost over $120,000 to implement and was funded through building materials donations, local community groups such as the Raleigh Host Lions Club, a small grant from the NC Youth Outdoor Engagement Commission, and from grassroots funding efforts. I want to acknowledge that the students, this was built for you. We care about you. We want to be involved in your success, said Francisco Chavez, president of the Governor Moorhead Foundation. Mark Hoverston, dean of the College of Design, added that through projects like these, our students get to learn about how things are built, how to raise money, and how to work with people who have their own unique challenges and goals. It's our motto at NC State to think and do, and this is a great example of that. NC State students have poured their hearts and souls into every aspect of this project, collaborating with experts on the construction of the space, speaking with teachers to learn about individual student needs, and advocated within their communities to bolster funds and encourage donations from neighbors and community members alike. Brooklyn Scotto, former director, and Catherine Brooks, current director, spoke passionately about the importance of teamwork to make this design a reality. This project was born out of a simple yet powerful idea to create a space where children of all ages, regardless of their circumstances, can come together to play, learn, and experience the joys of childhood, said Brooks. This is more than just a playground. It's a symbol of inclusivity, empowerment, and hope, and is a testament to what can be achieved when we come together from a shared purpose and commitment to making a difference in the lives of others, said Scotto. Supporters, thank you to the generous supporters who committed time, energy, and resources to make this project possible. Brian Bell, Freedom by Design faculty advisor and professor in the School of Architecture, NC State University. Andrew Osterlund, Osterlund Architects, PLLC. McClure & Associates Construction. NC Youth Outdoor Engagement Commission. The Raleigh Host Lions Club. donations from individual community supporters like you. From safetoddles.org, by way of NCRS, Liz. About belt canes, the only mobility tool for toddlers who are blind. Belt canes enable children born blind or mobility visually impaired to begin walking on time, allow later walkers to start walking, and help infrequent walkers to meet their recommended amount of physical activity. The pediatric belt cane consists of a lightweight rectangular frame that connects with magnets to a custom-made belt. The cane tips slide along the floor and provide two points of contact. The diagram indicates magnetic handles with spring action, a specialty frame, carbon fiber shafts with reflective coating, a standard frame, structured belt with a fastener, rubber foam interlayer, magnet ports on each side of the waist, cane tips with ball bearings and steel plates. Adults find the pediatric belt cane easier to keep in position, so the child experiences maximum white cane safety. The two-step safety buffer provides sensory feedback as it protects the child from most forward collisions. The pediatric belt cane is an effective, developmentally appropriate mobility tool. Adult oversight is the key to children with MVIB using the pediatric belt cane. Children are not able to be put the belt on or connect the cane frame independently. However, once the belt cane is attached, the children need less direct assistance from adults than with handheld white canes. All children benefit from the belt cane. Children who have direct instruction from certified professionals and whose families use it with them most of the day receive the most benefit. Benefits of early introduction of pediatric belt canes. Introducing your child to a belt cane at a young age can have many benefits for their development and well-being. Here are just a few. Increased independence. Adult confidence in belt cane safe mobility results in their creating more opportunities for blind babies to engage in safe and fun independence. Reduced risk of injury. Adults love seeing how belt canes stop the child from colliding with danger, reducing the risk of injury and increasing their safe mobility. Improved cognition. Adults found that the ability to keep their children safe led them to engage in more typical toddler play with balls, dolls, and roughhousing, less stimming and more learning. Improved social skills. Adults said when their children wore the belt cane, they were more social. They enjoyed the playground. At home, they seek out their family and playmates. The belt cane is a safety buffer for parents to use to keep their blind toddlers safe when physically active. Parents provide the belt cane because it enables them to feel confident their blind toddlers are protected as they explore. Author Ambrose-Zikin, 2022. Features of pediatric belt canes. Standard and custom sizes. Our belt cane sizes grow with your child, ensuring maximum comfort and functionality at every stage of development. Molded grip handle. The handle is designed to comfortably fit small hands and provide maximum grip, ensuring a safe and secure experience for your child. Reflective tape. Our belt canes feature highly visible reflective tape to keep your child safe and visible in all lighting conditions. Lightweight construction. Our belt canes are designed to be lightweight and durable, ensuring ease of use and maximum functionality. Two frame sizes per belt cane. Each belt cane has a standard long frame and a shorter tight spaces frame. The standard frame is the correct length for the child's height and is recommended to be used for most activities. The shorter frame is designed for use in smaller spaces, for example, cluttered living rooms with furniture with legs. Expert support. Our belt canes come with a learning guide to help you teach your child how to use them. Our team of experts is always available to answer your questions at 845-244-6600. There are hot links to provide more details and purchasing information, and I will continue. I'm running low on time, but Mother's Day was last weekend, so here is an abridged article from fightingblindness.org about A Mom's Journey by Jennifer Probst. It all started with an E. We were in the optometrist's office for a regular visit. My son Jake was in cross country and wanted to try contact lenses instead of glasses. He'd already been through an exam 6 months ago, so we were hoping the appointment would go quickly. I had no idea my definition of normal would forever be changed after that day. He couldn't see the E. We made an appointment with specialists who did an array of tests and who told us it was a genetic issue, but they didn't know which one. It didn't stop us from going down the portal of the internet. After our own research, we came to our own conclusion. As long as it wasn't this thing called Stargardt, we should be okay. Many diagnoses seemed fixable, treatable. Many had hope attached to it. Stargardt did not. When we received the genetic test, the dreaded ABCA4 gene popped out at us on the report. My husband and I were carriers for Stargardt disease. There is no cure. My son's vision was beginning to deteriorate at a rapid pace, and in 6 months, he'd lost more than half the vision in his right eye. In a fog, we learned the factors that my son would be living with. Loss of central vision, no cure. Periods of plateau where vision stabilized, and then periods of rapid deterioration. I remember thinking I'd be curled up in my room under the covers crying and believing my life was over. Jake took the news with a positivity and sense of faith I rarely saw in adults, let alone a 16-year-old who suddenly had his future upended. My husband and I pulled it together and presented a united strong front, but inside I was breaking into pieces. My path as a mom diverged into a side road, bumpy and full of hidden potholes. I'd lie awake at night trying to wrap my brain around Jake's future and my new role that I'd perhaps been preparing for my whole life. I battled with terror of the unknown and a diagnosis I couldn't protect him from. My son is a writer and film student. He had to learn to speak up for himself with his teachers. He couldn't see the board. He couldn't read his textbooks or take normal tests. He began not to recognize faces, even of his friends. He got lost more easily, making cross-country running a bit more challenging. When he could no longer read any normal print, we got him a Kindle, and he used audiobooks. As a book collector, I began hunting for large print books so he could still collect them. We got bigger television screens and made IMAX movies a family adventure. Our house is now full of lights and magnifiers. Jake took on each challenge one thing at a time. We worked together. I began finding that delicate balance of being his advocate yet allowing him to find his own way. But there were other factors I hadn't counted on. I have a core belief that I taught my son, life happens for you, not to you. There is beauty in everything, but we need to look harder to find it, to pay attention. I learned so many things from my son. I learned his positivity and faith in the world did not shatter even when faced with a life-changing disease. I learned his ability to laugh and joke was one of his best assets. I learned he needed his independence even more fiercely, and that while the world tries to be taught to think outside the box, my son is forced to do that every day in the most simplest of tasks. I learned that having Stargardt doesn't change the person you are. It only changes the path taken and the scenery. I learned so many things from my son being diagnosed with Stargardt. When things are harder, we are more grateful. We celebrate wins a little louder, and the failures with much more kindness and understanding. I learned I am now a better mom. My heart is fuller. I love more deeply, with a joy that sometimes overwhelms me. I've run out of time. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of our program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.